cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the Renegade Reports. I'm Jonathan.
And Ramon is present. How are you, Dr. Witt?
Yeah, I'm okay. You're back from the Caliphate.
Back from the Caliphate. I've got the Zika virus. Our universities are burning. I love being back in Africa.
But the Renegade Report still has not fallen.
Still not fallen. Only risen. Unlike Cloudy.
Yeah, well, good thing he's not our boss, because even though we don't get paid, we'd probably be paying to produce this.
I haven't paid my TV license before it was cool. I think I owe like $3,000 or something. So that's like 10 years.
I pay my TV license just because it's not worth the annoyance.
What annoyance?
Oh, the lawyers that phone you and the letters and all the rest of it. But you can criticize me because I deserve it. I shouldn't be paying that crap. As you said, our universities are on fire. Well, some of them are.
Cops are shooting people. White people are fighting other white people on campus. I saw a white person call an Indian girl a colonist.
That's fantastic.
Yes. It's brilliant.
Yeah. So to discuss all of this, and specifically from the cop side of things, we're trying to get a student who disagrees with us onto the show. But believe it or not, once again, quite difficult. If you know someone and they want to come on the show, we want to have the discussion on the other side. But so far, no luck. We almost had one and she's bailed. But we're going to discuss the cop side of things, not only to the university, just in general. To discuss that, we have someone supremely qualified to do so. Our guest this week is Zach Mbele. He is the DA Shadow Minister of Police. He is a member of Parliament.
An honourable member of Parliament.
I apologise. Apologies, Speaker. Apologies. And welcome to the show, Zach.
Thanks very much. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, great. So, cops, police. Let's start off with the fees must fall stuff we've seen in the last week. We've had police sort of asked to come onto campuses to assist with protests which have become violent. What's your view on the police's role here and whether it actually escalates things, perhaps makes them worse? Some people have argued. Other people say, well, the police need to protect those students who want to study. Where do you land on this?
Well, in principle, we know that the police have an important role to play in ensuring rule of law and enforcing public order. Also in terms of their mandate to protect property and people's rights. So in principle, the police do have a role to play on campuses, especially where we've seen instances of arson and destruction of property. In reality, of course, practically, my big concern is that our public order policing units is heavily understaffed, under-resourced, and under-trained. And so the risk you have is that by their presence and by their action on campuses, they would actually escalate the violence and they would contribute to the problem as opposed to diffusing it. Public order policing is one of those areas of policing where you have to get it absolutely right. Otherwise, the whole thing... can I swear on your show?
Yeah, go for it.
Please do.
Oh, yeah. No, otherwise the whole thing is a fuck up, you know?
Yeah.
Right there.
That's
F-bomb.
Kind of the dilemma is that in theory, in principle, they have a role to play. They should play that role. But in reality, there's a grave risk that they actually make things worse.
But well, let's get into that, Zach, because I think the police, well, for me, they're just, paid thugs of the state, being an anarchist and all that. But I mean, I'm sure they do have a role to play enforcing drug laws that are immoral in my eyes.
Let's get to the point.
But in terms of training and in terms of the resources available, what is the issue there? I mean, I'm sure they've got a wide budget from the States. So why are they under-trained and under-resourced?
Well, much like the rest of the police service, except the interesting outlier or anomaly, which is our VIP protection services, who cater to our political elite, they lack for nothing. But like much of the rest of the police service, this is the outcome of years of chronic neglect and mismanagement. So in the DA, in our messaging and our issue driving, we characterize the state of the SAPS as being the four U's, understaffed, under-resourced, under-trained, and under-equipped. And the root cause of that is at least 10 to 15 years of incompetent management, who, because they're incompetent, have had skewed priorities and have failed to enforce accountability within the police service. The police service has to be a tightly run, well-oiled machine that operates within strict bounds. And as soon as things become lax, as soon as things are not run effectively the way they should be, the whole thing falls apart. And that's what you've seen. Just by way of numbers, for example, in the early to mid 2000s, the public police, public order policing units stood at a strength of about 11,000 members. And remember, these are all guys and some women who get specialized training around crowd management, diffusing and de-escalating public violence and that sort of thing. And those numbers plummeted so that by the early 2010s, it was down to about 4,000. So 7,000 had been deleted. There wasn't a human resource management process to replace the ones lost through attrition and to ensure constant upgrading and the refreshing of training. And that's why the POP units now struggle so much to deal with violent protests, be they service delivery, be they student protests, and any other outbreaks of public violence.
Yeah, that's quite interesting in terms of the resources. Obviously, I think, as you mentioned, with regards to public order policing, it's very much you either get it right or you get it completely wrong. I suppose Marikana is an example of that. I don't know if you'd agree with that sentiment.
Absolutely.
With regards to this public order policing, what's your is it just on the campuses? For example, we've seen that there are police, but things aren't under control. Is that completely a numbers issue now? Is it more to a training side of things? Would the 11,000 have made the difference if we had 11 instead of 4,000 and there were more on the WITS campus, as an example? Or is it that they're actually not sure how to react because the training hasn't been good enough? What is actually happening in our police? So what are the details?
Okay, so it's actually both of those factors that you mentioned, and probably a few more. And Marikana, as you mentioned, was a perfect example of that. So with Marikana, what we saw was a heavy role of other units of the SAPS, primarily the TRT, or the Tactical Response Team, as well as the NIU, which is the National Intervention Units. Now, those are what's in common parlance or in policing parlance are called crack teams. They are specialized or receive highly specialized training to deal with things like local level terrorist situations and that sort of thing. So they're trained to be fast acting, to be highly reactive, and to act with deadly force, but with minimal collateral damage. Precisely not the set of skills and the kind of trained conditioned responses you want in public order policing. Yeah. And that's why we saw the situation we had in Marikana. It was lightning speed decision to act with deadly force, and we saw the massacre of 34 miners within about, I think, 12 seconds is how long that gunfire went on for. On the other hand, now coming to the campus situation with the student protests, the key pillar of effective public order policing. I always make the example of how the UK in the mid 80s under Margaret Thatcher dealt with the wildcat strikes, the miner strike in England, which is about sheer force of numbers, because they redeployed police from other parts of the country. You have sheer force of numbers who act without firearms, and that's simply about overwhelming the violence or the disruptive elements, so that you can first have an impenetrable wall that contains the disruption, that can quite gently but effectively push it back where it has to, as well as to then close in on it and then disperse it into smaller pockets that are then easier to clamp down on and to arrest. And all of that can happen without a single shot being fired. And so basically, we have a toxic mix right now on the campuses, where it's not enough numbers to implement that kind of effective public order policing strategy, as well as a mix of police officers who are not POP trained and therefore are not employing the right approaches in order to defuse and to contain those situations.
So Zach, saying that, I mean, do you think the decline was around the Jackie Celebi era? Was that when we first felt that the police force wasn't up to scratch? Because Celebi was a very actually soft guy. He wasn't. He was an office clerk type of policeman. He wasn't an on the ground chap.
Well, more than that, he was completely ineffective because he was not an experienced career officer, which is what we need in a national police commissioner. The acting police commissioner we have now in Komoto Pahlane is the first person in that position, bar a brief stint between Birikele and Pieja, who is actually a career police officer. So somebody who understands the systems, has gone up through the ranks, has experienced different operational environments. So with three successive ones, from Celebi to Birikele to Rhea Pieja, we've had people who were completely out of their depth in the policing environment. And yes, the peak of the POP numbers was you know, shortly after Celebi came in, and we saw that decline happening under him and going into Tlele. But not just that. Remember, it was also under Celebi that many of the specialized units were disbanded very, very unwisely. One of which, and I know we're going to get onto this a bit later in terms of the theme, but one of them was then also the Narcotics Bureau. And that's how we've seen drug-related organized crime increase so much over the past 10 years or so.
So what do you make of the crime rate statistics that came out a few months ago? I mean, I don't think they are the correct ones. I've heard that there are other ones that are far worse but can't be published. So, I mean, do you see a correlation, of course, between the efficacy of the police and the crime statistics themselves?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. On two fronts, right? So we saw the murder rates has gone up yet again. It's been a trend for many years now. Now, on the one hand, the police minister and the acting police commissioner, I've read they made comments around how murder is related to our historically violent society, It's about, you know, it's a social fabric crime, as they call it, which is true, because most murders that happen, somewhere around 75 to 80% is the average, happen between people who know each other, acquaintances, colleagues, family members, usually in the home, or in some kind of interpersonal encounter. Now, the police can't do anything to prevent that, because that's about, you know, people
personal issues.
Violence, exactly, yeah. But what is interesting on that murder front is that the proportion of murders related to organized crime, so that's home burglaries, business robberies, car hijackings, has increased over the years. I saw an estimate from a researcher at UCT putting that at between 35 to 45% of the overall murder counts, which means we are inching towards a situation where as many as half of all murders in this country would be related to organized or syndicate crime. And that is something the police can do about through effective crime intelligence and detective work to crack the spine of those syndicates who perpetrate and drive those crimes. So the police can do something to a reasonable degree to bring down murder rates. On the other hand, where we've seen decreases in crimes such as sexual assaults and some others, which are highly reliant on victims reporting the crime, those decreases, I'm convinced, are much more a case of underreporting, because people do not trust the police or have confidence in them to do anything about it. No investigation will lead to somebody being arrested and convicted, and so people don't bother. I mean, most people would not bother having their cell phone stolen in a mugging on the streets, unless you need the docket for insurance. And so there's a massive underreporting and undercounting of the real incidents of those kinds of crimes.
All right. So let's talk a little bit then about the structures, about you speak about police intelligence. And we've got a situation where we've got a gentleman like Bernard Lameza at the Hawks. We obviously had the disbanding of the Scorpions, which seemed to be quite a good unit. The Hawks seems to have its own sort of political motives. I mean, I'm sure they do some other stuff. I'm not sure what that is. Maybe you can enlighten us a bit on the good stuff they do. We've got there was the whole Richard Mdluli saga, which I think is still ongoing. Are our police in a position to actually do anything about these crimes that you're saying that they could very much influence? Are the structures so decayed? And is there so much political wrangling that really we're at almost a point of no return?
I wouldn't say we're at a point of no return. I always like to think of myself as cautiously optimistic, but we certainly are in a very bad place and have been for a while. The reforms that have been implemented by the acting police commissioner since he came in. In actually about a year ago, in fact, when Pierre was suspended, I think are going to start turning the tide. I always say he certainly inspires much more confidence than his predecessor, because he knows what he's doing and he seems to know what he's doing in the reforms he's making. But it will take time to repair the damage that has happened as a result of the chronic neglects and mismanagement we've seen over the last 10 years. I mean, crime intelligence takes a long time and meticulous care to build up to be a you know, sort of finely tuned machine that works the way it should, because you're talking about penetrating syndicates who are rolling in money, are highly motivated because their syndicate activity is very profitable, and are operating with far less scruples and limitations than the police are. So you really have to be on point when you are tackling organized crime, and crime intelligence is key to that. And it has been severely weakened and hollowed out because of the mismanagement. So it'll take time to turn it around, but I don't think we're at the point of no return, and we certainly can make quick wins at the station level when it comes to responsiveness and ensuring a conducive working environment for police officers when they're dealing with crimes that actually most of us care about the most and that we're scared of the most. So it's not too difficult to make major dents on home burglaries, business burglaries, streets, common robbery, because that's all about improved visibility or increased visibility to deter crime, as well as better detective work through quality investigations that increase conviction rates.
So, Zach, what is the point of politicizing the police force? Arguably, it wasn't done intentionally, so to speak, but as with everything the ANC touches, it's about who gets what and when.
Yeah.
In your mind, was this done intentionally to protect people in the ANC, or was it just a case of nepotism, people who can't actually do the job, and that failure to actually implement anything meaningful?
To my mind, and I am speaking with my DA hats on here, it's a natural and direct outcome of the ANC's cadre deployment policy. So, the thing about states, institutions, and organs of states is that in theory they should work brilliantly if you have people who are fit for purpose leading them and who are occupying positions they are qualified for. But as soon as cronies, cadres, friends, and allies are put there and loyalty has trumped merit in that selection, that's where you start seeing the degradation we've seen. I think it's become intensified in the Zuma era, because Zuma is the first president, I would contend, we've had who has a personal, direct, and compelling agenda motivation to undermine independent state institutions, especially those in the security and law enforcement cluster, because he is fighting tooth and nail to either snuff out or avoid facing those charges that first came up from the NPA. That is number one on his agenda, and that is what underpins everything we've seen from the capture of, well, from the closing down of the Scorpions in the first place, to then ensuring that the NPA is captured, and to the interference we've seen in SARS, as well as the political interference in the police service. So although Mbeki appointed Salebi, who was useless, and presided over the beginnings of the decline of the police service as systemically, but at least the NPA was still functioning, and the NPA was going after high profile people and investigating a way there was wrongdoing. Now, our anti-corruption capacity is at its lowest levels ever.
Because that's what irritates the hell out of me, is that because these things are politicized, average South Africans are actually getting hurt and killed, and all these terrible crimes are happening to South Africans.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a huge travesty. And Zuma, as we know, is an unmitigated disaster. And this is the tragic outcome of having such a poor leader in the highest office. But certainly, at least looking at the local government elections, I think there's hope for the beginnings of an upwelling to to repel that and to start moving things back on track. So we'll see how that plays out.
You'll sit in sort of parliamentary meetings with the minister, I would assume, and other sort of, I hate the word, but stakeholders. What's the minister like? Is he as inept as we've seen him in his videos defending Nkandla, or is he? Does he kind of buy into the process in a similar way to what I'm hearing from you, which is hopeful?
So the minister, the one word that always jumps to mind for me when it comes to the minister and his performance in his portfolio is lackluster. She is completely hands off in terms of addressing the key priorities that he should be driving as the political head in that portfolio around professionalization of the SAPs, ensuring that they are getting the basics right, and having tight supervision over the functioning of those departments, so that they deliver effective policing that actually brings crimes, that actually brings crime down, doesn't just manage crime, doesn't just contain the crisis, but actually makes meaningful dents in it. And the only time we've seen him act with any gusto, where he does then wield his muscle, is in pursuing the witch hunts we've seen in aid of that Zuma-centric agenda. So the witch hunts against Dramat, the former head of the Hawks, who are starting to investigate the Nkandla case from the Hawks perspective, as well as the witch hunt against McBride in the IPED. And now by his secondary support of Ntlemeza in the witch hunt against Gordhan in the whole SARS issue. So where it matters, he is absent and you know, just doesn't have his hands on the steering wheel. But when it comes to the politics of his portfolio, he's very involved and very gung-ho about making sure that he is the henchman who serves his political boss.
Right, Zach. So let's bring things a bit more to a local level, specifically in the Western Cape. So what many people were surprised to hear was that the Western Cape actually has the highest, I believe the murder rate is the highest there, or the crime rate in general is the highest in the Western Cape. And obviously it is, it's not everywhere, it's in certain selected areas. Mm-hmm. How can that be? I mean, because there's this notion that the DA actually does the basics quite well. But I know you don't control the police, though. So
yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah, well, that's the starting point, and that's the key point, is that the provincial government does not control the SAPs. Policing, as far as the SAPs are concerned, is entirely a national competence. And provincial government only has an oversight role over the police. If we did run the police in the province, we obviously would see a very different situation. And in fact, as a sidebar, I have my own theory and idea about how we could technically create a provincial police service. But that's maybe another discussion for another day.
You're welcome to go into it now. I'm interested.
Okay, sure. So, I mean, this is in inspired by my own libertarian anchoring. And I thought the idea first came to me very slowly when I was still working in the provincial governments. So I became very au fait with policing oversights, because that's what we did in the provincial government, and Premier Helen Zille led the charge in terms of establishing the Khayelitsha Commission of Inquiry. And really, what it comes down to is the idea of how much of of what the police do can be implemented through alternative mechanisms or alternative processes. And it comes down to four things, right? The first component of policing is visible policing, right? So that's where you've got to just see people, see vehicles on vehicle patrol, foot patrols, visibility wherever you go, certainly where there's high traffic, so that you deter opportunistic crimes, as they're called. That's muggings and car break-ins and that sort of thing. The second element is then investigations, or the detective services division. And that's about investigations that lead to convictions in courts, because the higher your conviction rates, the stronger the deterrence factor, because people know that they've got a very high chance of getting caught and facing the might of the law if they commit crime. Third element is crime intelligence. That's obviously about collating, analyzing information, identifying crime trends, so you can plan your allocation of resources and your strategies to either preempt or to respond to those crime trends. And then the fourth element is then prosecutions. Now, the thing to say about this thing, and in my head, I've called it the Cape Civilian Constabulary, just because I like alliteration. And also, it makes for a very nice acronym of the CCC.
It's very colonial, the constabulary.
Yeah,
we should decolonize your word there. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
But basically, the idea in combining all of this is that you have, you know, the CID patrollers we have in the Cape Town City Centre. So you have that kind of CID type.
I think it's worthwhile just mentioning that quickly to the listeners who aren't aware, but we have them a couple in Joburg. Essentially, the community in a certain area gets together. They all sign an agreement that they want to improve the area, and there's a fee that everyone pays towards almost private security to uplift the area. And there are other things that go into it as well as security, but it's worked very well in certain areas. I think the places Ramon frequents in town in the CBD in Johannesburg is one example, and Cape Town Seapoint, I think, did it as well.
That's right.
Quite successfully. All right. So that's this, that kind of concept.
But that's more of a that's more of a private security type operation than a police operation.
Yes. No. It can take different models. Of course, in the Cape Town CBD, it's public private, where you have EPWP funding going into it, as well as additional levies raised from businesses and ratepayers in the area. But basically, you have that increased layer so you would have that element of a visible policing, CID type a visible policing, vehicle and patrol backed up by CCTV surveillance. You would then also have a team of private investigators who would investigate priority crime categories, as well as you create an alternative crime reporting system where people can log crime incidents with a geolocation information via an app, perhaps, whatever the case might be, and then you build up that raw data. Now, all of this combined together could have a massive dent if it's focused properly, but the caveat is that it'll be very, very, very expensive, and that's why I think practically it wouldn't happen, because you're talking about hiring additional people to be visible patrolling, you're talking about private investigators, and you're talking about running this database for crime information.
I don't think it'd be expensive.
That's
fine. All you have to do is just outsource policing to private security. Just disband the police. Outsource to private security, and there you go.
Well, yes, in the bigger picture, in an ideal world, through a libertarian frame, that is what I would do. I would outsource. I would marketize all aspects of policing, and rather dispense security vouchers to households to then employ and hire different services as they need them. But I must add that there are two aspects of policing that I don't think would be appropriate for the private market to handle, which is what we touched on earlier, public order policing, as well as short-term custody or short-term detention, because those two aspects entail coercion and the limitation of individual freedom. And I think the state is the appropriate body to exercise that kind of coercive power. But everything else certainly can happen on a market basis.
All right. Look, I like your ideas. I think Roman's living in a bit of a pipe dream. We're not going to.
Zach just agreed with me. He did agree.
In an ideal world.
An honorable member of parliament agreed with me.
And that's why I'm a DA voter. I know you don't vote. This is why I'm part of the solution.
Well, in an ideal world, Zach wouldn't have a job.
All right.
Your current one, at least.
All right. What I do want to say, though, is that some nice ideas there. There may be a cost, but we know that we've got areas that we're wasting. There's huge wastage across all of government, of course. But you mentioned the VIP unit. Let's talk a little bit about the VIP unit.
Can I really just answer the question that came before, and I went off on a tangent about the Western Cape? Because yeah. I can very quickly in 2 points. The no first problem. Is, as you said, yes, although the province has the highest murder rates, it's highly concentrated in literally about four or five policing precincts related to either interpersonal violence, often fueled or driven by alcohol abuse, as well as gang-related crime. So literally, if you look at the policing precincts of Nyanga, Manenberg, Khayelitsha, Hanover Park, and maybe another one, maybe Kraaifontein, I'm not sure. But certainly those four, Nyanga, Khayelitsha, Manenberg, Hanover Park, between the interpersonal violence, murders, stabbings, and that sort of thing, as well as gang-related, that is pretty much all of that massively high murder rates. And the picture overlaying on that is that the areas with this highest murder rates are also the most under-resourced, where we see police to population ratios that are way above what should be the average for the province and the country. So an acute situation is severely and chronically under capacity to actually deal with that. And that's how we have that.
Do you think that's done on purpose?
I don't know if it's done on purpose. I wouldn't go, I certainly have no evidence to believe that. I think there are two parts to it. The one is that the formula that the police service uses, which is apparently quite complex, I haven't quite looked into it in great depth, but the formula that the police use to decide the allocation of resources is highly flawed. And I'm working on getting to the bottom of exactly what the issue is. It was uncovered during the commission into policing in Khayelitsha. But the other aspect is that basically you find that the better resourced areas, your suburbs, your former white suburbs, because they have strong and well-capacitated CPFs, the community voice and the community action to lobby for optimal resourcing for their areas yields better results. And so any attempt to draw resources away from those areas is more likely to be strongly resisted, whereas the communities in your Nyanga and your Khayelitsha with weaker CPFs and weaker organized community action to improve things on that front do not have the same efficacy in getting results that they should for their police stations.
All right. Cool. Thank you. Okay, so I want to get on to I mentioned the VIP unit, and just you can tell us a bit about that and the wasteful sort of expenditure there, because I really dislike Jacob Zuma, but I don't want to kill him. And I would imagine that most people don't, and I think a president of any country should have some security, but the level of security he has, but not only him, but his ministers, and then we've got DGs who also have ridiculous amounts of security, MPs in some cases. You can discuss that a bit with us, and just the general areas of wasteful expenditure where we could be putting these things to good use, and perhaps this leads into all those units that were shut down. I know you mentioned narcotics, but I find the fact that the child protection unit was shut down to be quite abhorrent. So can we go a bit into that?
Sure. To kick off from where you ended, fortunately the child protection units have been reestablished since about 2008.
Oh,
I think
okay.
It was.
Wasn't aware.
But they're not back at the capacity that they were. They are suffering that same understaffing, under-resourcing problem. But where they do exist, they actually tend to do good work within those constraints. So the basics are in place. We now just need to scale up so we can have a much better footprint. On the massive expenditure of the VIP protection services, the core issue there is the fact that we have such a bloated executive, massive cabinet, 34 ministers, if I'm not mistaken, as well as the concomitant deputy ministers. In some portfolios, we have two deputy ministers, and all of those, if I'm not mistaken, an executive office bearer must have at least two protectors with them at all times. Sometimes it's four at a time.
In case the plebs touch them.
Something like that.
That's the official wording, actually, in the document. It says, you shall be protected against plebs touching you.
So that's the first thing, is that if we reduce the number of cabinet ministers from the number we have now, you already slice off that expenditure that comes with them. But the thing is, the SAPs also have discretion to assign protectors to anybody else that they deem fit based on a security analysis. And we've heard whisperings that that has been abused in some instances for a couple of years, which is why I put in a parliamentary question to the police minister about two or three weeks ago. A couple of months ago, in fact, asking for a detailed list of every VIP or dignitary or designated individual who received VIP protection over the past 5 or 6 financial years, and I'm yet to receive that information. For now, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt that it might be quite a complex data set to compile, but by the end of the year, it's going to start looking like they are dodging trying to give that that information. And I think that'll show a clearer picture as to what underlies this high and increasing expenditure.
Well, I think it's very simple. Sorry, Zach, to interrupt. The Dutch Prime Minister rides around on a damn bicycle, right?
Yeah.
You can. I met the Swiss federal president, and I didn't even know it was him. I was in Zurich at a hotel, and he was next to me, and no one told me until after the fact, this is the president. I was like, oh, I had no idea, because he didn't have anyone with him. So, I mean, if you have a society that doesn't see you as terribly important, or you see yourself as important, you don't need all this blue lights rubbish and protectors and against what? Against the people that voted for you. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
You're not the damn king, man. We don't live in a feudal system, even though some do want to.
Yeah. No, there's complete excess, especially, you know, blue light convoys and masses of bodyguards are completely over the top. I think it can certainly be massively trimmed down. if not in some instances,
dispensed with,
got rid of entirely. I mean, I was once, as a very quick anecdote, I was once having sundowners at a popular restaurant in Sea Point, and Helen Ziller walked past on the pavement, and it took me about 10 seconds to realize it was her, because she was just walking with somebody else down the pavement, you know, and you know, perfectly fine, no issues, and that's really how it should be. If anything,
very dangerous. The Jews in that area are highly vicious towards Helen Ziller. I'm surprised there wasn't a sniper on one of the roofs there.
But then again, Zach, I met you a few weeks ago, and I mean, your two bodyguards did pat me down and take away my 9 mil. I want it back, by the way. This expropriation is disgusting. For the listeners, I kid. Anyway, right. So we got about. Sorry,
yeah. Jonathan. I want to lead into what you want to ask.
Yes.
I want to lead into it.
So, okay, go ahead.
You know, so we're talking about how the police are under-resourced and under-trained and all of these things, and a lot of it comes down to funding. So Ramon, of course, wants to talk about one of the areas where we probably are wasting our money throwing it at the police. So is that a fair enough lead into what you want to say?
Well, I think all of the police is a waste of money, but drugs, right? The DA has a thing about, well, not the DA in general. People in the DA have this thing about drugs and alcohol that drives me insane. So, policing drugs is impossible. The drug war has created far more drugs and far more organized crime. If you have a war on something by the state, it increases production of that thing, right? There's never been like a war on poverty. Right. So anyway, so what is the fixation with drugs and alcohol in the Western Cape by people like Helen Ziller and things like that? Shouldn't you ask for legalization and more healthcare for these people rather than more police force and jails and you know, and that sort of shit? Like, what's your view on that?
Okay, so my view, and I must emphasize here, it is my personal view. Lest the party head office start being inundated with emails and phone calls about how the DA has become pro drugs. Personally, I am in favor of decrim. I don't believe the states should be policing what individuals choose to put in their own bodies. And at the very least, within the current framework, I would say that the police are wasting their time by pursuing drug possession, especially sort of small scale drug possession, because that's not going to deal with the root issue. And then, of course, if you decriminalize narcotics, then you take away the power of the syndicates who drive drug trafficking to make massive profits and sort of run that black market. But there's no doubt that you know, in the Western Cape, the situation being what it is, because of the alcohol abuse factor that is seen in trauma cases, in murder cases, drunk driving, and so on, and because of the link of drug trafficking to the Cape Flats gangs, who are then also linked to illegal firearm trafficking and abalone poaching and blah blah blah, the whole organized crime, syndicate crime aspect of it is important to address because of how it spills over into other criminal violence, in particular around car hijacking, because many of the syndicates become interlinked. That's where I would stand. So you know, personally, I would support narcotics decrim because one, the state has no business telling me or anybody else whether or not I can snort a line, you know, on a weekend. Just in principle, but also because that war on drugs, as you say, has given the power to the syndicates, to the black markets, to then make massive profits and to feed into the violence and the trafficking that comes from their activities.
Yeah, I mean, I also just think as I said that if you do that, you also suddenly don't have to police that aspect of society, and so you can use those resources elsewhere. You can use that money elsewhere for more important things than, you know, knocking down someone's door or pinning someone to the ground because they have a bag of weed.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think more importantly, drugs and alcohol are a symptom of something. They're not the cause of something. So if you find what the underlying cause is, which is of course grinding poverty and that sort of stuff, right? A lack of family structure, a lack of
education,
all those factors. The symptom is drug and alcohol abuse. So to have someone who's been traumatized their whole life and who uses drugs as a means to forget about life, and then you still lock him up where he joins more gangs in prison. I mean, it's ridiculous. If I were to be really frank, it's perpetuating a cycle of violence on that person in perpetuity.
Yeah, often. It adds fuel to the fire, and I certainly am in favor of shifting from a law enforcement approach to drugs to a public health approach, much like the much vaunted Portugal model. I've read a fair amount about that.
So, please tell Madame Premier to change. Look at the science. Look at the data.
When you next see her walking past you in Sea Point,
And tell her to unblock me, please. She hasn't unblocked me after like 3 years.
It's because you're the most horrible troll in South Africa. Right, Zach. I think that covers quite a bit for the moment. Ramon, any further burning questions?
No. I think we've been Zach has been quite illuminating. I still think the police is a waste of money. Just outsource labor, broke all security and investigations to the private sector. It'll be much better because it already is. But I understand that we need the police because reasons. So let's try to just make it better. But Zach, that was great. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I thoroughly enjoyed the discussion, and I'll be glad to be back on any other topics.
Oh, for sure. No, don't worry. We'll keep you in mind for lots of things. Thanks for joining us and really giving.
Hold on. One
great
caveat.
Great comment.
When you do become Minister of Police, can I take a drive with you in your Blue Light Brigade?
There will be no Blue Light Brigades when the DA is in government.
You're no fun whatsoever.
Sorry.
All right, cool. Zach, thank you so much. We're going to just wrap up the show quickly. Ramon, any further comments other than to tell us again that the police are terrible, terrible things?
Well, individually they're not terrible, but the concept is awful. So, no, nothing much. I think there are problems to be solved, and Zach seems to understand what those are. So, nothing more to add.
All right, yeah. So, well, hopefully we can get some peace on our university campuses, and maybe a bit more peace in our communities as well. Those crime statistics, even if they aren't the real ones, are just as bothersome.
What are you, Miss Universe? World peace.
Yeah, well, I would like us to have a bit more. Well, I certainly on the campuses, I would appreciate it if we could stop stoning each other. That's it for the week. Next week, look forward to a cracker.
We have a scorcher on the cards.
Yeah, if you didn't think this was controversial enough or didn't tickle you enough, next week, big one in the bag. You can obviously like us on Facebook. At the Renegade Report on Twitter, Renegade_report. Oh, Zach, while we still got you, tell me what's your Twitter handle?
Oh, sure. It's @ Zakele Mbele.
Yeah.
That's just my first name and surname as one word.
Cool. If you can hear that, that's @ Zakele Mbele on Twitter. You can follow him. He is the Shadow Minister of Police and a Member of Parliament. We will catch you next time. Thanks so much for listening, and goodbye.
cliffcentral.com.